and welcome to the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette and Fort Dodge Messenger for Thursday, March 28th, 2024. I'm your reader, Mary Frances, and you are listening to IRIS. We are the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the blind and print handicapped. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of Iowans with print disabilities. Taking a look at the front page of the Globe Gazette today, large photo of U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack and a panel of stakeholders at the Healthy Meals Incentives Initiatives meeting. And the headline there is Compliments to the Chefs. The second article on the front page is Governor Signs Bill to Restructure Area Education Agencies. And we'll start with that big story at the top. Compliments to the Chefs. Vilsack visits district, praises tastier, healthier meals. It's not the stereotypical lunch lady land. The cafeterias in Clear Lake schools are offering fresh, locally sourced, healthful food choices. U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack visited the Clear Lake Community School District on Monday to recognize the Food Service Department for its efforts to improve school meals. Earlier this month, the district received a Healthy Meals Incentives Recognition Award for its work to create nutritious, enjoyable meals for students. Clear Lake was one of the first four winners of the award, jointly created by the U.S. Department of Agriculture and Action for Healthy Kids, as part of the USDA's Healthy Meals Incentives Initiative. Julie Udelhofen is Clear Lake's food service director. Over the last 2 years, she's overseen changes to improve the nutritional content of breakfast and lunch. She's also educating students about how to eat healthier without sacrificing taste. One component is lowering sodium content in prepared foods by choosing low or no sodium options. When it comes to seasoning foods, the staff has come up with a salt-free blend of herbs and spices, including buffalo, Greek, ranch, vegetable, garlic and herb, and Italian seasonings to flavor dishes. Cooks use the blends to season vegetables, and they're only available on the lunch line. Vilsack asked Udelhofen if she had considered marketing the spice blends outside of the school. There could be a revenue stream there, Vilsack said. The Healthy Meals Incentives Initiative also provided the schools with funds for some much-needed equipment upgrades. Barbara Machura directs the Action for Healthy Kids program that oversees the Clear Lake programs. Quote, a lot of times, schools haven't had equipment upgrades done at all over the years. They're operating the same equipment that was installed when the schools were built 60 or 70 years ago, Machura said. By upgrading equipment, food service can focus on preparing fresh foods in appealing ways and moving away from convenience foods for kids. Udelhofen and the team installed a new walk-in freezer in the middle school, purchased food processors for each kitchen, and updated the serving line to provide fresh salads daily for students. Machura said none of this would have been possible without the adventurous spirit of the school nutrition team. The team was on hand in matching t-shirts to hear from stakeholders in the Healthy Meals Incentives Initiatives program, including local producers and food hubs that help to source fresh produce for students to enjoy. Of all the changes staff and their partners have implemented, Udelhofen sees the education component as one of the most valuable. Quote, trying new foods has been amazing for the students, she said. By sharing foods, we build relationships and trust with the kids, not just when it comes to lunches. Each time staff bring out a new item or of produce to try, it's accompanied by an informational poster filled with facts about the food and a QR code that takes users to a Google page with recipes and other information about the item. We rotate out which school we go to, Udelhofen said. 1 month it's elementary, then middle, then high school. The kids are pretty enthusiastic. They were excited when we tried a variety of potatoes, like fingerling and even purple potatoes. A lot of them have never seen one like that before. So far, students have tried varieties of tomatoes, peppers, pears, parsnips, rutabagas, carrots, and potatoes. Working with agencies like Healthy Harvest of North Iowa and the Iowa Food Hub, Clear Lake schools are able to source produce from local growers like the Kittleson brothers in St. Ansgar, who grow potatoes and onions. Matura says the benefits are extensive. Not only do students have access to fresh local produce, the program supports small and mid-sized growers. Diversity of crops improves soil quality, and it goes on and on. Vilsack echoed Matura. From our perspective, he said, it's important for us to continue to look for creative ways to support that system, and schools are critically important to that. Second story on the front page shows Governor Vilsack seated at her desk. There's a photo, signing into law legislation, and the copy reads, Governor signs bill to restructure state area education agencies. Public school teachers will get a pay boost under the bill. Significant changes to the operation of Iowa's 9 area education agencies that provide support to schools, plus an increase in state school funding and a boost in teacher pay, were signed into law Wednesday by Governor Kim Reynolds. The AEA changes reflect a goal set by Reynolds during her Condition of the State address nearly 3 months ago. However, what she signed into law is a stripped-down version of what she originally proposed after strong backlash from advocates for special education and the AEAs. During a bill signing ceremony in her formal office at the Iowa Capitol, the Republican governor said the new law will improve special education for students with disabilities and called the changes, quote, meaningful and necessary reform, unquote. She said while the AEA system works well for some students, that, quote, hasn't been the experience for all students. Some schools haven't used some of the AEA services despite being forced to pay for them. Others have felt that they didn't receive the quality that they expect, Reynolds said. And many schools, urban and rural, large and small, have raised concerns about a lack of transparency regarding the cost of AEA services, unquote. Democrats vehemently opposed the changes to the AEAs, arguing that significant alterations were unnecessary. House Minority Leader Jennifer Confirst, Democrat of Windsor Heights, again criticized Republicans for approving the legislation. Quote, when you look at the celebration Reynolds is having, I want you to think about the families who have so much uncertainty now as they're wondering what will happen to the service in their communities, what will happen to their kids who are getting AEA services. There are still so many questions, Confirst said. What the new law will do. And here's a bulleted list. First bullet, increase state funding for Iowa's K-12 public schools by 2.5% in the next school year. That's a $119 million increase for a total of $3.8 billion, according to the state's nonpartisan legislative services agency. The next bullet, raise the minimum salary for a first-year public school teacher in Iowa from the current $33,500 to $47,500 in the 2024-25 school year and to $50,000 the next year, and set a minimum salary for teachers with at least 12 years of experience at $60,000 in the upcoming school year, $62,000 the following year. The next bullet, budget $22 million in the upcoming school year and $23 million the next year to address other veteran teachers' salaries and $14 million to help boost the pay of educational support staff like paraeducators. And the last bullet, make many operational and funding changes to the area education agencies. Keep some funding for special education and other education and media services with school districts instead of sending the funds directly to the AEAs. Move special education oversight from the AEAs to the State Education Department and create a task force to study and recommend future changes to the AEAs. AEA changes. Area education agencies oversee education of Iowa students with disabilities and offer media and consulting services to schools and students in their boundaries. Currently, federal and state special education funding goes directly to the 9 agencies. AEAs also receive property tax funding for media services and other education services for schools in their region. Once the new law is fully implemented in the second year, 10% of state funding for special education services will remain with school districts for them to use, while 90% will continue to flow directly to the AEAs. In the second year, all state funding for other education services and media services will go directly to the schools, which could use that money for AEA services or to get them from another entity. The law also creates a division in the Iowa Department of Education, up to 53 new full-time equivalent positions to provide oversight of special education services provided by the AEAs. Reynolds' proposal to overhaul the agencies, a system created 5 decades ago by lawmakers, drew strong opposition from educators and parents of students with disabilities who worry that it will hurt special education in the state. Most school superintendents also expressed opposition, although some said they are in favor of having more control of their special education dollars. The final proposal was the result of weeks of negotiations between Reynolds and majority Republicans in the House and Senate, and discussions with AEA officials and school superintendents. Quote, "While this bill has been the focus of much discussion and debate, it has also presented opportunities for insightful conversations and meaningful compromise," Reynolds said. "When it comes to legislation that offers so much potential for the future of our state, I appreciate knowing that there is a willingness to keep the lines of communication open and to continue to work together to reach a compromise. That took place from the very beginning of the session. I think we ended in a really good place." The compromise, House File 2612, was approved by only Republican lawmakers. All Democrats and some Republicans voted against the bill because of their objections to the AEA provisions. Democrats said they also opposed the 2.5% school funding measure, saying that that is insufficient. They expressed support for the teacher pay boost and criticized Republicans for combining the provisions into one bill. Quote, "The reason teacher pay was included in the final package is to hold teacher pay hostage, and so that they can do exactly what they're doing now, which is to say that some Democrats did not vote for teacher pay," Confers told reporters. "There was more wrong with this bill than there was right with this bill," she said. Senator Ken Rosenboom, Republican of Pella, who chairs the Senate Education Committee, said the new law will make changes to AEAs that are, quote, "modest and fair but necessary," and will not threaten the viability of the AEA system. He said it also will add accountability and transparency that he says is currently lacking. Quote, "The AEAs have done a tremendous amount of good for many, many years in Iowa. All of us are appreciative of that," Rosenboom said at the bill signing ceremony. He continues, "As I've said many times, there are 1,000 bright stars in the AEA constellation, but the world has changed since the AEAs were created in 1974, and reform is needed," unquote. Representative Skylar Wheeler, Republican of Hull, who managed the bill in the House and has a 5-year-old daughter with autism who receives special education services from an AEA, said superintendents, school board members, teachers, private school officials, and parents of students with disabilities were all involved in discussions with lawmakers during the legislative process. Quote, "We are improving on a system that will see increases in outcomes for our students," Wheeler said. Senate Minority Leader Pam Yoakum, Democrat of Dubuque, issued a statement thanking what she said were thousands of Iowans who expressed opposition to the AEA changes. Quote, "Parents, educators, students, and community leaders changed the course of this legislation," she said. "They prevented Republican politicians from fast-tracking this bill and exposed Governor Reynolds' misplaced priorities," unquote. The major changes in the new law will go into effect July 1st of this year. And turning to page 2, Hampton native selected as 2024 Iowa Cherry Blossom Princess. Patricia Tegatz, that's T-E-G-G-A-T-Z, has been selected to be the 2024 Iowa Cherry Blossom Princess, representing the state during the National Cherry Blossom Festival in Washington, D.C., it was announced in a press release. The Cherry Blossom Princess program offers cultural, educational, and professional development opportunities for young women leaders. Founded in 1948, the week-long program is a cultural exchange aimed at honoring the friendship fostered by the gift of the cherry blossom trees to the United States from Japan over a century ago. Throughout the program, young women are recognized for their leadership and accomplishments and given the opportunity to engage with foreign diplomats, first ladies, presidents, members of Congress, and other business and community leaders to help strengthen bilateral relations on behalf of their state or territory. One young woman is then chosen to serve as the United States Cherry Blossom Queen, traveling to Japan to further strengthen the friendship between the two nations. Tagatz was selected by the Iowa State Society to be the Iowa Cherry Blossom Princess delegate in the upcoming 2024 National Society of States Cherry Blossom Festival in Washington, D.C., which takes place April 7th through the 13th. She's a graduate of Hampton Dumont High School and the University of Iowa. She's currently living in Washington, D.C., working as an executive mission aviator in the Air Force. She's the daughter of Tom and Sue Tagatz of Hampton, and then it shows a headshot of the young lady. Our next article, in addition to church services, North Iowa celebrates Easter with variety of events. And it shows a little three-year-old girl on an Easter egg hunt, picking up an egg in the green room at Music Man Square's craft show from 2023. Before the solemnity of church services on Easter Sunday, there will be a variety of fun Easter-related activities for the whole family this weekend. Skate with the Easter Bunny, Friday, March 29 from 5 to 7. North Iowa Figure Skating Club invites you to the Mason City Arena for a fun-filled evening. The Easter Bunny will make his appearance to skate and be available for pictures. The cost is $5 per skater with a $3 skate rental fee. Spring Egg Extravaganza, Saturday, March 30, 9:30 a.m. at the Fossil and Prairie Park Preserve in Rockford. There's an Easter egg hunt at 10 a.m. there for children 10 and under. There will be spring activities, live rabbits, and chicks, and you can talk to the Easter Bunny there. Also, Saturday, March 30th, 10 a.m. at the Plymouth Easter Egg Hunt, Plymouth Betterment will hold two youth Easter egg hunts, a bake sale, and City Hall vendor show. At 10:30 a.m., south of City Hall, children under 5 will have an Easter egg hunt. At 10:45 a.m. at the Old School Park, ages 6 and above will hold an Easter egg scavenger hunt. The Easter Bunny will show up there around 10 a.m. Easter Extravaganza Market, Saturday, March 30th, 10 a.m. Music Man Square, a vendor market opens at 10 a.m., Easter egg hunt at 2 p.m. The Easter Bunny will be popping in and out. A meal will be offered for $7. That starts at 11 a.m. And there's a raffle for adults and kids at 3:30 p.m. And the Candy Kitchen Ice Cream Parlor will be open from 1 to 5. Noon Saturday, March 30th, the Mason City Parks and Recreation invites you to the North Iowa Area Community College campus for their Easter egg hunt. This is a free event. Once again, it's at noon. Easter Cookie Workshop, 1 to 3, open house on Saturday, March 30th. Fat Hill Brewing will take cookies to a whole new level with royal icing and instruction from Karen with Sweetie Peas Sweets and Treats. You can enjoy a free drink while you decorate Easter-themed cookies to take home. Your cookie set will include 5 cookies, and you'll learn new techniques like how to make a stained glass effect and edible moss. The cost is $35 a person. That includes your drink, your cookies, a gift bag, instruction, and encouragement. Easter egg hunt, 2 to 3 p.m. Saturday at St. James Lutheran Church. Lots of eggs, photo ops, and fun activities. The fun starts at 2 p.m. everything will be outside, weather permitting. Another Easter egg hunt, 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday, the Clear Lake JCs. This is a free event for children 2 through 3rd grade at the Central Gardens of North Iowa, which is located at 800 2nd Avenue North in Clear Lake. Children will be separated by age groups to hunt in separate areas of the gardens. Each group will have an opportunity to find a golden egg and win an Easter basket, courtesy of the Clear Lake Rotary. You can have photos with the Easter Bunny, of course. If there's bad weather, this hunt will be located indoors at the Clear Lake Wellness Center. Our next story. Funeral home director sent photos of corpses to children. A former funeral director is facing potential sanctions for allegedly sending photos of dead bodies to children and adults. The Iowa Board of Mortuary Science has charged former funeral director Jennifer Speakermeyer of Iowa City with unethical conduct and with knowingly misrepresenting information to a prospective buyer of funeral merchandise or services. According to the board, Speakermeyer sent photos of decedents to both adults and minors, and also had a minor accompany her and observe her while she embalmed a body. The board has not publicly disclosed when the alleged incidents took place or the context in which they are alleged to have occurred. The available board documents provide no information on the basis for the misrepresentation charge. The board documents also don't state where Speakermeyer was working at the time of the incidents, although state workforce records indicate she was employed by the Texas-based chain SCI Iowa Funeral Services in 2020, and that her employment with the company ended that same year. An employee of one of SCI's businesses, the Kunick Collins Mortuary in Davenport, stated on Tuesday that Speakermeyer worked there at one time. In a written statement that SCI attributed to another of its locations, Wirtz Funeral Home of Davenport, the company said, quote, "We're taking the incident very seriously. However, I'm not at liberty to discuss the details of any associate's employment, but I can tell you that she's not currently working at any of our locations," unquote. Board records indicate the investigation into Speakermeyer was initiated in 2022. The board now has limited options in sanctioning Speakermeyer, as her license to practice in Iowa expired 10 months ago in May of 2023. Speakermeyer said on Tuesday that she could not comment on the matter other than to say that she worked at Kunick Collins Mortuary, as well as other Iowa funeral homes, while employed by SCI, and that at this point, the charges against her are based on unproven allegations. Quote, "It was my understanding from the board that none of this was going to be made public," she said. A board hearing on the charges is scheduled for June 6th. Our next story, care facilities fined for failure to try CPR and call 911. A pair of Iowa care facilities are facing sanctions for failing to provide medical assistance for their residents, two of whom died. Earlier this month, the Iowa Department of Inspections and Appeals proposed, but held in suspension, an $8,700 fine for the Aspire of Donelson Nursing Home. In that case, the home had failed to attempt cardiopulmonary resuscitation, or CPR, for two residents, both of whom died. In the first of those two cases, according to state reports, a male resident of the home was found in his bed at 5:15 a.m. January 18, ashen-colored with no pulse or respirations. The aide who found him later told inspectors the man was still warm when found. According to the inspectors, the aide had checked on the man after noticing his light was on, suggesting that he was up or at least awake. After noticing that the man was not breathing, the aide summoned a nurse and asked whether they should initiate CPR. The aide allegedly told inspectors the nurse never answered and instead called the family to report that the man was deceased. The nurse told inspectors that he had not been exactly sure about the resident's code status, which would indicate whether attempts to resuscitate him should be made, according to state reports. He acknowledged, however, that it was later determined that the man was full code, indicating that CPR should have been attempted. 11 days after that incident, a female resident of the home was found unresponsive in bed at about 10 p.m. The woman's guardian and family were notified, and a funeral home was summoned to pick up the body. Although the resident was full code, no one on staff had attempted CPR, according to state reports. According to inspectors, the nurse who examined the resident that night later stated she didn't know the resident's code status, but said that the woman's hands and feet were purple in color. An aide who was present said the woman was still warm when found. A third employee who worked that night told inspectors she didn't know how to determine a resident's code status and had not been trained in such matters, according to state records. Separately, the state inspections department fined the Silvercrest Garner Farms Assisted Living Program $3,500 for failing to promptly contact emergency medical services for a resident who was in respiratory distress. Early on the morning of March 2nd, the staff found a resident on the floor with her oxygen saturation level somewhere in the range of 90 to 100%, according to state records. Typically, an oxygen saturation level below 92 is considered dangerous. The staff reported they telephoned the on-call nurse and left a message, but never received a call back. Later that day, the resident was again found on the floor. This time, their oxygen saturation level was in the 80s, suggesting that urgent intervention was needed. Again, the staff reported calling the on-call nurse and leaving a message, but did not receive a call back. The following evening, the resident's daughter found the resident lying on the floor with an oxygen saturation level in the 80s. The daughter asked that her mother be sent to the hospital, and 911 was called. According to state inspectors, the director of nursing later concluded the staff had failed to ensure that the correct on-call schedule for nurses was available to workers. The on-call nurse the staff had been trying to reach wasn't even employed by the facility at the time of the incident, according to inspectors. The inspector's report does not indicate whether the resident survived, but notes that after she was taken to the hospital, she was admitted for treatment of COVID-19. And turning to obituaries today and the today's Globe Gazette. Lois I. Sellon, that's S-E-L-L-O-N, age 98, of Nora Springs, passed away surrounded by her family Monday, March 25th. Funeral services, Friday, April 5, 11 a.m. at the First United Methodist Church in Mason City. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the service. Burial will take place at Memorial Park Cemetery. Edgar Charles Fox, age 91, of Forest City, passed away Friday, March 22nd, at the Westview Care Center in Britt. Per Edgar's wishes, he will be cremated and a celebration of life service will be held at a later date. Colleen Ross Caldwell Dyer, that's D-Y-R-E, age 93, passed away Tuesday, March 26, at the Oakwood Care Center in Clear Lake. A graveside service will be held Friday, March 29, 1 p.m. at the Memorial Park Cemetery in Mason City. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the Clear Lake Fire Department in memory of Colleen. Pearl J. Simpkins of Madrid passed away March 21st at the Madrid home, 93 years old. She wished to have cremation services with interment at Memorial Park Cemetery in Mason City. That will take place this summer alongside her husband. You can read more about her obituary or leave online condolences at islescares.com. And here's a couple shorties from the digest. Chick-fil-A backtracks from antibiotics pledge. The fast food chain Chick-fil-A backtracked from its decades-old no antibiotics ever pledge intended to help prevent human antibiotic resistance linked to the rampant use of drugs in livestock production. Instead, the company said in a statement this week, it will embrace a standard known as, quote, no antibiotics important to human medicine, unquote, which entails the avoidance of medications commonly used to treat people and limits the use of animal antibiotics to cases of actual animal illness. Livestock producers have long used antibiotics to boost rapid weight gain in animals, such as chickens, pigs, cows, and sheep, which improves the profitability of their businesses. Over the past decade, many nations, including the U.S., have begun to restrict the practice as evidence mounted that it was contributing to drug resistance and reducing the effectiveness of antibiotics in humans. Chick-fil-A said the move reflects concerns about acquiring sufficient supplies of antibiotic-free chicken. And here's a big one. Krispy Kreme and McDonald's have announced plans to offer Krispy Kreme products at McDonald's locations across the U.S. A phased rollout is expected to start later this year, the company said, with availability at participating restaurants nationwide expected by the end of 2026. So that'll be cool. That's all we need. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service, for the blind and print handicapped. Today, I've been reading the Globe Gazette for Thursday, March 28th, 2024. Up next, we'll take a look at the Fort Dodge Messenger. On the front page of the Messenger today, we have a large photo, Kelly Blair in Curiosity Powers Improvement, Blair Women Impacting Agriculture Award. A couple other stories, Camp Read a Lot back at St. Edmund, and back on the ballot, EMS levy will return to Hamilton County, and Looking for Match, Career Fair brings students and employers together. So before I get to the profile of Kelly Blair, we'll start with the harder news back on the ballot. EMS levy will return to Hamilton County ballot in November. And there's a photo of Dwayne Hendrickson, chief of Jewel Fire and Rescue, reading a resolution. That must be in front of the Hamilton County Board of Supervisors. Dateline Webster City. The proposed Hamilton County EMS levy will return to the ballot in November. The initiative was originally on the November 2023 ballot, but was removed due to red tape. It returns this fall with the full support of the Hamilton County Board of Supervisors, which voted on it Tuesday. When November rolls around, voters in Hamilton County will be asked to approve the levy that would add 30 cents per $1,000 of taxable property value to fund a request from the Emergency Medical System Advisory Council. This levy, if it passes, would continue for 15 years. It will be called Proposition A on the November 5 ballot. Dwayne Hendrickson, chief of Jewel Fire and Rescue, read the resolution Tuesday during the supervisors' regular meeting. He leads the Hamilton County EMSAC, or MSAC, which is an early county entrant into the greater state MSAC that is part of the Iowa Department of Public Health. The money would be for EMS services only, he said. Fire is supported by taxes. EMS is not, he said. Supervisor Rick Young elaborated, if you call the fire department, they have to come. EMS is strictly volunteer. Quote, there's a difference between fire and EMS. Fire call, they have to go out. They have to. They're bound by law to go because they're supported by the public. With EMS systems, if you get a call, they don't have to go. The whole reason they go is that they care about the people. Hendrickson has, in the past, explained that in most of Hamilton County's small communities where EMS service larger relies on goodwill and good-hearted people, there is little or no money to purchase advanced life-saving equipment needed in emergency situations. One problem in the small towns is that calls are billed to people who use the service. It's increasingly common that those bills are never paid. more and more move from the area and ignore the invoice, he said in the past, or they are Medicare calls, which means only 60% of the invoiced charge is actually paid. In the cases of Medicaid billing, only 10% of the invoice is actually paid. As far as the need, he said, lift equipment, which can bear greater human weights, is increasingly necessary. Sophisticated heart monitors can cost $30,000. Supervisor Jerry Cloberdans voiced his support. Quote, everybody should know that EMS is a vital service throughout the county, regardless of where you live. If there's an accident out on the road and there's need for it, EMS comes out and assists the deputies. It's a very important service, and there shouldn't be anybody in the county that they should have to suffer. Cloberdans has said in the past that the point is to be consistent throughout the county. Nobody will be left out. If the initiative passes in the fall, the funds would be held by the advisory council and distributed as needed to agencies upon request. The expectation is that the levy could generate roughly $350,000 a year. Young has been reported saying Iowa allows this kind of EMS levy to be as high as 75 cents per $1,000. To pass in November, the initiative must get at least a 60%, must get rather at least 60% of the vote. Also from the front page, Camp Read a Lot back at St. Edmunds. Literacy night set for April 3rd at the school. St. Edmund Catholic School will provide young students with an opportunity to enhance their reading skills. On April 3rd, a special literacy night will be held for St. Edmund students from 3-year-old pre-K through 5th grade in the elementary school gym beginning at 5:15 p.m. The theme for this event this year will be Camp Read a Lot, with creative camping-related activities to engage those that attend. There will also be a book fair held during the event, book basket raffles, a free will donation dinner, and a book walk with the opportunity to earn free books. Quote, encouraging a child's love for reading is crucial for their social, emotional, and cognitive growth, said St. Edmund Elementary Principal Tabitha Acree. By immersing in the written word, children can expand their imagination and explore passions, interests, and new ideas. Our literacy night helps families connect through shared literacy activities, she said. Caitlin Julius, an elementary instructional coach at the school, said over 220 students attended last year, with almost 300 signed up already for this one. Quote, holding our literacy night event is so important because it is a chance for parents to engage in their child's learning while finding how to foster their love for reading, Julia said. When our children are young, they are learning to read each day. Eventually, this changes to them reading to learn each day at school. But many times, parents wonder, what can I do to help my child at home? The purpose of this event is to support parents in working with their child. By attending Literacy Night, parents will be introduced to specific strategies that they can use to help their child strengthen their phonics. I'm going to say, isn't that funny? I stumbled on that word. Phonemic awareness. It's phonemic awareness. And or reading and comprehension. These literacy night activities and information paired with support at home as well allows children to learn to love reading. In the fun literacy activities that all participate in during this event, it shows everyone that reading is fun. Registration will be in the elementary lobby and commons areas. It will be organized by the first letter of your last name. A through J goes from 5:30 to 5:45. Session 2, 5:50 to 6:05. Students are encouraged to wear pajamas or comfy clothes as a way to be more relaxed while reading. For those who provide an early RSVP, a special book goodie bag will be awarded to them. Next story from the front page, big photo. Kelly Blair She's standing in front of a truck at her farming operation near Dayton. The headline is Curiosity Powers Improvement. Blair wins Women Impacting Agriculture Award. Sometimes it's the simplest things that plant the seeds for future success, even if you don't realize at the time that they're taking root. That's true for Dayton area farmer Kelly Blair, who enjoyed growing up on a farm, spending time outdoors, and watching the seasons change and staying curious about the natural world around her. Both my husband and I come from farm families who encouraged conservation, said Blair, who recently received the Women Impacting Agriculture Award from the Iowa State University Extension and Outreach. Now as a farm mom, I get to help pass that conservation legacy to our kids, she said. Blair also remains curious about better ways to blend conservation with production agriculture. She shares her knowledge with other farmers, along with consumers who are interested in learning more about modern ag. Thanks to her involvement with various Iowa ag groups, for example, she's participated in social media question and answer sessions live from the tractor to help answer people's questions about cover crops. She speaks from a deep base of knowledge. Quote, "We have a lot of on-farm trials going on, and we focus on continuous improvement," said Blair, age 40, who farms with her husband AJ, the fourth generation of his family to farm the land, and his father Kelly. Blair and her family, that includes her son Wyatt, age 14, and daughter Charlotte, 12, grow corn, soybeans, oats, alfalfa, and cereal rye. They also have a 450-head cattle feedlot, and they manage 45 cow-calf pairs and a 2,400-head wean-to-finish swine barn. While Blair is involved in all day-to-day aspects of the farming operation, she focuses on tracking all soil sampling and soil fertility planning. Blair and her family work closely with an ISU Extension field agronomist who serves North Central Iowa to increase the productivity and profitability of their farm through efficient, environmentally conscious management. We regularly meet with Angie, our agronomist, and other advisors to assess what's working well, what we could do better, and how we can use the data we collect on our farm to make smarter management decisions, Blair said. The agronomist enjoys working with Blair. Kelly is highly curious and wants to learn all she can to improve things on her farm, including integrated pest management, IPM, practices, and profitability. She's heavily involved in the feedback loop on the farm, so she can truly identify the continuous improvement that is made. When things don't go as planned, AJ and Kelly work as a team to reevaluate and try again. Blair's interest in agriculture began when she was growing up on her family's Century Farm near Pisgah in western Iowa. As a high school student, she considered a medical career but decided she wanted to work outdoors. "I knew I wanted to work in agriculture, but I didn't realize how deep this passion ran," she said. She cites her parents, grandparents, and husband as her biggest influences. After earning her bachelor's degrees in forestry and agronomy from Iowa State University in December 2006, Blair accepted a job with the Mastchoffs, which is a pork production company, as a certified crop advisor and technical service provider with the Natural Resources Conservation Service. Blair covered western Iowa, providing technical assistance to the Mastchoffs production partners, from writing swine manure management plans to assisting with neighbor relations. Many of the practical lessons Blair learned through this work guide her role on her family's farm today. The Blairs include a wide range of conservation practices in their operation, from no-till and strip tillage to cover crops that limit erosion and enhance soil health. The Blairs also participate in the Iowa Nutrition Initiative through ISU and the Iowa Soybean Association. Nitrogen fertilizer is among the most critical inputs to crop production and one of the costliest. When applied at the optimum rate, nitrogen boosts productivity and profitability, and it avoids the environmental costs of excess application. However, finding that optimum application rate can be a challenge, since it can vary dramatically from year to year. The Iowa Nitrogen Initiative is a public-private partnership that helps provide Iowans with the best nitrogen science in the world for the benefit of productivity, profitability, and environmental performance. Quote, "We care about soil and water quality, and we think it's important to take a voluntary approach to Iowa's nutrient reduction strategy," she said, referring to a science and technology-based framework to assess and reduce nutrients entering Iowa waters and the Gulf of Mexico. Her efforts have not gone unnoticed. In 2017, Blair received the Iowa Secretary of Agriculture's Iowa Ag Leader Award for outstanding leadership in improving Iowa's water quality. Blair also looks for ways to help people gain a greater understanding of modern farming. Through the years, the Blairs have hosted multiple field days for various organizations, from the Iowa Soybean Association to Iowa Learning Farms, which was founded in 2004 to help build a culture of conservation across Iowa and beyond by encouraging the adoption of conservation practices. During a Soy Foods Council farm and food tour in Iowa, Blair and her family met with leading food bloggers, cookbook authors, dietitians, and other key influencers. Quote, "We want to be the ones telling our story instead of letting someone else tell it," said Blair, who also volunteers with Common Ground. That's a program sponsored by the Iowa Corn, Iowa Soybean, sponsored by Iowa Corn, Iowa Soybean, the National Corn Growers Association, and the United Soybean Board, where farm women speak directly to consumers about their shared values for growing food. Quote, "That means inviting people out to our farm and letting them see everything that's involved. Plus, the tours help us gain a better understanding of consumers' concerns." Blair also participates in a strip-till, no-till discussion group facilitated by ISU, where farmers and others experience with reducing chill, okay, it must be experiment with reducing tillage and no-till, and they share their knowledge and act as a sounding board for people who want to adopt these farming practices. "Leaders lift each other up," said the agronomist, who noted that Blair's humility, quiet confidence, and enthusiasm attract those who want to learn more about crop and livestock production. "Leaders like Kelly make this a stronger world for everyone in agriculture," she said. Blair, who is honored to receive the Women Impacting Agriculture Award, looks forward to helping make her family's farm more productive and profitable. Quote, "Farmers can be a big part of the solution to not only provide healthy, affordable food, but leave the land better than we found it and protect Iowa's natural resources. We never stop asking why as we look for ways to do things better. I'm excited to accept this responsibility," she said. And there's a photo of her on her farm walking along one of the buildings with her dog. And turning to today's obituaries in the Fort Dodge Messenger, Ronald Lee Hutchison passed away at the age of 59 in McKinney, Texas. Passed away Wednesday, February 28th. Arrangements will happen at a later date. It doesn't say anything beyond that here. Stephen Bartman, visitation, will be Tuesday, April 2nd, 9 until 9:45 at the Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory. This is Dubuque. Funeral service for Stephen Bartman, 10 a.m. Tuesday, April 2nd, at the Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory, with full military honors rendered by the American Legion Post No. 6. Next obituary Paul Kipfer, that's K-I-P-F-E-R, of Gilmore City. Funeral services Tuesday, April 2nd, 10:30 a.m., Faith United Methodist Church in Gilmore City. There will be visitation Monday, April 1st, from 5 to 7 at the church. Stephen Vogt of Lorville, memorial, 10:30 Saturday, this Saturday, at the UMC in Lorville. Burial will take place in the Evergreen Cemetery in Lorville. There will be a visitation from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday at the UMC in Lorville. Sheridan Cook of Algona. Funeral services Tuesday, April 2nd, 11 a.m. at the First United Methodist Church in Algona. Visitation 10 a.m. until service time at the same church. Ruth Anderson of Iowa Falls. Service Friday, March 29, 11 a.m. It will take place at the Woodley Funeral Home. And turning to the opinion page, here's a messenger editorial. Fort Dodge region needs more truck drivers. Efforts to expand Iowa Central Community College program deserve support. Anyone who heads out on the road in Webster County or any of the nearby counties can't help but notice that there are a lot of trucks traveling in the area. And despite the large number of trucks, someone might see, the reality is that our region's economy needs even more truck transportation. Within the region, transportation and warehousing is the second largest growing industry, behind only manufacturing. The limiting factor is the number of people with commercial driver's licenses who can take the driving jobs. In the Fort Dodge region, there are 6,000 open jobs in transportation and material moving industries. A comparison of our area's transportation job openings with others across the country shows the area has a lot more open jobs than the national average. By some estimates, the local area has 1,000 more openings than the national average in that field. If these positions could be filled, more local residents would be earning a good living while businesses grow and profit. Iowa Central Community College has been training people to earn commercial driver's licenses and become truckers for more than 20 years. Many of the drivers steering big rigs around our region got their start by training at Iowa Central. About 8 months ago, the college introduced a competency-based education program that enables people to earn their commercial driver's license in 30 days or less, depending on what kind of previous experience they have. Graduates of the Iowa Central Driving Program have taken jobs with big over-the-road haulers, and they've also been hired by cooperatives, warehousing businesses, and distributors whose workload is mostly right in the area. Iowa Central's leadership team is considering ways to grow the driving program to meet the need in this region. The college's East Campus on Quail Avenue was formerly the home of Smithway Motor Express and could be an ideal home for an expanded program. Getting instructors and trucks out into some of the surrounding communities to reach potential students there is a worthwhile objective also. We encourage the college's board, administration, and faculty to pursue grants and any other funding opportunities that will make it possible to grow the driving program to meet the obvious needs in our area. And that was from the Messenger editorial. And we'll finish up with a political cartoon from the opinion page of the Fort Dodge Messenger today. It shows 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people out on a beach, sitting in beach chairs, holding umbrella drinks. And their mouths are all open. And the thought bubbles say, the caption is, far right Congress members on spring break. And their thought bubbles are, let's shut the whole thing down. Traitor, he must be removed. Apparently, we can't oust the Cabana boy because the ice melted in our pina coladas. And that's how we'll wrap up today's reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette and Fort Dodge Messenger for Thursday, March 28th, 2024. I'm your reader, Mary Frances, and you're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of folks with print disabilities. And you can listen to this and podcasts of our other programs and learn more about what we do on our website, iowaradioreading.org. Thanks for listening and have a great day.